The Initial Reaction Podcast is on the air. My name is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, fresh off of a concert-going experience alongside my podcasting colleague, J.P. Kadoran of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, a pretty rare social appearance for the both of us.
The biggest Jimmy World fan I know is a short, bald man with a goatee, and my name is J.P. Kadoran from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. How'd you enjoy Friday night, buddy?
You know, I don't know if I am as big a Jimmy Eat World fan, though, as your wife. She was very much into the music as well.
No, probably not. I think you took the cake.
Well, I am nothing if not a man who loves his cake.
Did you have fun, buddy?
I did have a very good time. I have a good time every time Jimmy Eat World is playing music, but I was really surprised by Fits in the Tantrums, yeah. Which really was a different experience than I was expecting. They have a few songs that are pretty popular. I thought they were kind of going to maybe come out in business suits and sunglasses and sing their sort of electronic pop songs, and it wasn't like that at all. It had a totally different vibe. They were very, very good at working the crowd, I thought, and the whole room was totally in the palm of their hand at the rave. On Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee, they had the whole place jumping, and I just didn't expect that. I had a great time watching them as well, and there was nothing wrong with the Head and the Heart, who closed the show either. We didn't stay for as long into that set. They're more of a folk band. They were a little more low key, but definitely the winner of the night was Fits in the Tantrums. I was pretty impressed.
Good. Yes, I agree. Fits in the Tantrums usually gets an instant fast forward when it's on the radio, or next station when it's on the radio. Just because you've heard each song 300 times within the first 2 weeks of it coming out, but live they were something else. So good stuff. That was all around fun. I think it's a good one time that we got to hang out that we don't need to repeat.
Surely we will not be seen in public again, particularly this past week when you did not invite me to go to the Big Ten Championship game with you in Indianapolis, even though you knew I was going to be in Indianapolis a couple days later, but you wanted nothing to do with me, so you yourself and Time Warner Cable Sports Channel could be on hand to watch the Wisconsin Badgers play. We'll talk about that a little bit, but also a big interview coming up here at the end of the podcast. Steve Jones of Kimberly High School, he is the leader of a program that has won 4 consecutive state championships and arguably, in my mind, the premier program, football program in the state of Wisconsin right now. And you, J.P. Kadoran, you caught up with your good buddy Steve and chatted a little bit about football, huh?
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal. We'll chat with Steve Jones in a little bit coming up, the head coach of Kimberly. And nobody has won 4 straight titles in the upper division. Stratford is the only other team that's won 4 straight, and that was in Division 6. So really nobody's done what he's doing right now. And by he, I mean they, as he will correct me several times in a few minutes, talking about the whole program doing this. So that was really fun. We talked about kind of some big picture and like how they're doing this. A couple interesting parts of it to tease. Asked him if it's possible for him to do this anywhere else, you know, if it's a Kimberly centric thing, if it's happening because it's Kimberly or just, you know, if it could happen anywhere. Asked him if he had any plans to leave, which clearly he would not say that he wants to leave right now or anything, but, you know, if college is on his radar or anything like that and what that process is like. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up. If I were you, I would keep listening, which I think you're probably going to do anyway, unless you tuned out after JR's concert review. So hard to tell.
Yeah, no doubt. Nobody listened to the last podcast because we talk way too much about music, and I'm sure nobody is interested in our review right now. But go see Jimmy Eat World. They are amazing. What really impressed me, though, JP, is that this time you're the one doing the interview. Usually I'm the one doing the legwork here. So this time you were the one who got to sit down and bring one of our guests onto the podcast. Very impressed.
Yeah, it was a lot of pressure, but, you know, I'm glad I could pull through. So... but yes, after said concert that we went to on Friday night, I got up nice and early to head to Indianapolis. The Badgers went there for the 4th time in 6 years. That's actually my 5th time in 6 years going for the football game because I went last year for Iowa. Also my 6th time in 6 years because the Final Four was there a couple years ago. So I have made that drive now after never being there in 24 years of life. I have gone 6 times in the past 6 years and it was fabulous. Not the game, but everything else was fabulous. It's just such a tremendous environment and atmosphere for a football game. Love it every single year.
I think the early sentiment was in that game that it was primarily, the crowd was primarily Penn State centric. A lot of blue in the stands. And then, of course, the Wisconsin fans trickled in, and certainly on TV it looked pretty 50-50. I don't know how you felt about it. I don't know if there was maybe some neutral fans on hand that sort of started gravitating towards Penn State as a little bit of the underdog. I know that's sort of a tricky thing to say about Penn State. There's a lot of reasons to root against them, but this was the first time they were in the Big Ten title game. Wisconsin has certainly been there three times before, so maybe there were some leanings that way. I don't know. What was the crowd like? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't. First of all, I don't think there were too many neutral fans. I don't know. I mean, sure, there's a lot of people who just bought a ticket to the game, like because they're Michigan fans or Nebraska fans who just bought a ticket and were going to go no matter what. So I guess you could count them as neutral. But I don't know if there's anybody who like needed to pick a team to root for who's just sitting there in neutral clothing. But I would say I think it did lean a little bit more towards Penn State. Again, this is the fourth time the Badgers fans have made this trip, so. Even though it is about another 3 hours in terms of driving distance, I think it was a 7.5 hour drive from State College versus, you know, 4 from downtown Milwaukee. So it's a little bit further for Penn State, but I would say it definitely leaned more towards like 60-40. And especially from everything that I heard and read the days leading up to it and the hours leading up to it, Penn State fans made it a 3-4 day trip. And if not that, definitely made it a full day's trip as opposed to Badgers fans or people like myself, who left at, you know, 9:30, 10 in the morning and didn't get there till 3 for a game that kicked at 8 o'clock Eastern. So I think Penn State had a little bit of an advantage, but it was pretty close to 50-50. Maybe 58-42 is probably the most representative number I could come up with.
That is very precise of you, JP. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Did it kind of feel like to you the game was over when the Badgers went up 28-7? Sort of
1,000%. Yep.
I certainly think if you added up everything for the season, the idea of being in the Big Ten title game, the idea of being in a New Year's Day, or in this case a January 2nd bowl game, people would be pretty happy with that. The old cliche goes, if you looked at it before the beginning of the season, you'd be happy with it. But just the circumstances of going up 3 touchdowns and being in such control of that game and to let it all slip away. I mean, and you got to credit Penn State. They played out of their minds. I mean, they threw it. And I know that the Badgers' defense maybe got exposed a little bit in the secondary, but it's almost impossible to imagine what they were able to do, just throwing the ball down the field 40 yards and having the receivers come down with it. Just a crazy, crazy series of circumstances. I don't know if you think about it in terms of the Badgers' defense really just collapsing. I'm sure there's some of that, but the Penn State performance was really just something I wasn't expecting. I should have been paying more attention to how good that team was to have been able to predict that when they were up 28-7, it wasn't over. I mean, I know it's easy to say that, but I truly thought it was over, yep. And it clearly wasn't.
This is why I would be terrible at sports talk radio, is because, as I've mentioned before, I believe in this part called a gray area. You know, it's not just that Wisconsin choked it away, or it's not just that Penn State, you know, executed and made their plays. Like, there's a little bit of both. Like, it was really weird to watch somebody execute against Wisconsin's defense, because we haven't seen that all year. Even against Ohio State, I think they gave up 30, but that was in overtime, you know? So we're talking about, like, the most points they've given up all year was, like, 23. And here's Penn State scoring at will in the second half, scoring 38 total points. So it was weird where the defense, you know, I don't want to say that they collapsed, but, like, there were soft spots, you know? I mean, and we kind of knew this all year. The Badgers secondary, Sojourn Shelton is a very good football player, and I think Leo Musso is a pretty good football player. But after that, they're not that strong, and they just hadn't really faced a lot of teams that took advantage of that. So I think you need to give a ton of credit to Penn State, because they executed. They did what they wanted to do. You know, they weren't running the ball, because why would you run the ball when you have TJ Watt and Vince Beagle staring you down? Get the ball out of your hands. Get it away. Get it by other players. So, you know, I think credit to Penn State because they executed. I think Wisconsin didn't play well, you know, so you add those two things together and you get, you know, what a lot of people are calling a collapse.
I think the total outcome we have is that you've got a Cotton Bowl, a January 2nd bowl game, against Western Michigan, who's sort of interesting because they're not from a power conference, they're undefeated, but I'm gathering you're sensing this too. How do we get excited about that game? It feels like such a consolation prize. Do you think as we get closer to the game, there's going to be a little bit more buzz for it, and we'll sort of have circled the wagons and start to feel better about Wisconsin football again, or is this going to be just a major downer?
No, probably not. Probably just gonna be a downer. I mean, there's not a lot to get excited for. Like, yes, it's a New Year's Six game. So, you know, I kind of still catch myself calling them BCS games. You know, like, hey, they still made a BCS bowl. But it's just not, it's, there's not much there. Now that's that, and that says nothing against the type of team that that Western Michigan could be either. Like they've beaten, I think, two Big Ten teams, which is more than a lot of Big Ten teams themselves beat, you know, so that's more than Michigan State beat this year. But there's no juice. There's no, first of all, it's a lose-lose, which everybody knows to begin with, because either you beat them and okay, you're supposed to beat them, you're Wisconsin, or you lose to them and that's obviously a lose situation. But just there's not a lot to get excited about. It's just more exciting, even if you're playing like a down, and they're not down this year, but like even if you're playing like a down Florida State team or like a down Oklahoma team, it's still that big name that you can get excited to beat, a down Notre Dame, who's really down this year. But you still get excited about playing those teams. And there's not a lot here. You know, it's a trip to Dallas, which I don't even think is that exciting. Jerry World is pretty cool. Badgers went there for a Final Four, though. So I don't know. Maybe people aren't even excited about that. And the secondary ticket market certainly shows that people are agreeing with me, because even a couple days afterwards, tickets were as low as $6.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm in Lexington, Kentucky right now. I'm going to go watch my alma mater, Valparaiso, play the University of Kentucky, actually, just a couple hours from us recording this. And the Kentucky football team, which doesn't go to a bowl game very often, they're going to a Florida game. And there's a big story about how pumped up they are to go to a Florida game. And you could, it's like, man, I kind of wish that we could trade places with Wisconsin, because not necessarily because of the location, but the buzz for Kentucky football is just, it's so positive right now, even though they won, what, six games. Whereas Wisconsin had a more successful season, and it just feels like a downer. From a legacy standpoint, where do you think, how do you think people are going to remember this team? Because
yeah.
I'm trying to like get a handle on what the highlights are, what the big moments are. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, they didn't beat any top 10 teams. They don't have a signature win. What do they have? I mean, I don't want to discredit it, because they were very good this year. The defense was great most of the year, but what do we hang on to 5 years from now?
Yeah. A few things there. First of all, I think, like, even if the Badgers got placed in a different New Year's Six game, I think it would still be a lot better. You know, like, if they were playing Florida State in the Orange Bowl instead of Michigan, you know, then there's a ton of hype just because it's just a different situation. I think the Orange Bowl is more prestigious than the Cotton Bowl. Florida State is a lot more prestigious than Western Michigan, you know? So I get the hype about even somebody like Kentucky going to Florida. There's just not much juice about going to Dallas for the Cotton Bowl. You know, there just isn't. So I think that starts with that. As for how they're remembered, I think you're right that they don't have a win against any teams in the top 10. Nebraska, LSU, and Michigan State were at the time, but nobody in their right mind can argue that either of those were top 10 teams now, or really even at the time. You know, I mean, the only reason Michigan State was because of what they did last year. The only reason LSU was because of preseason picks. And the only reason Nebraska was because they had gone through a really weak schedule, and you saw how they fared against actual teams later in the year. So, you know, you can't make the argument that either of those are top 10 teams again now or in the past. So good wins, sure. I would say how they're remembered, I mean, they're the fourth best Big Ten team, right? I mean, that's
right, definitely.
Maybe that's oversimplifying it, but listen, when the Badgers basketball team finishes in the top four, that streak keeps going and everybody's happy, and then it's about what do you do in the postseason. So this year, football team finished in the top four, which is about where they were talent-wise. You know, they won the games they were supposed to win. They didn't win the games they weren't supposed to. So I think it's just kind of a year where it's appreciative. I don't want to say it's the baseline at all, because they could have done a lot worse, but like this is the state of the program right now. This is exactly where Wisconsin football is, a great team that is not among the top 10, you know, like they're, well, what are they ranked right now? Like eighth?
I think eighth. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's appropriate, you know, like in that 8 to 12 range, like they're probably this year, they were the 8th to 12th best program in the country. And they kind of have been for a few years.
Definitely agree with that. I also think it'll be a year of near misses, because you look at the three losses they have, and a time setback. Certainly the Michigan game was one score, all three by 7 points each. And I look back at the Russell Wilson year with the Hail Marys and stuff. I mean, as great as Russell Wilson was, that is a year of major missed opportunities. Now, they were set up a little bit better because of Russell Wilson that year than they are now. But this was just, after the LSU win, somebody said this, and I kind of agreed with it at the time. I mean, after that win, there was nowhere to go but for the national championship. And even though that still seemed unlikely with the schedule they had, they were given an opportunity by beating LSU to have set themselves up for that run.
Yeah.
They haven't had that the last 2 years where they lose that opener. You know, they're kind of out of the question right away, and then they can kind of forge their own path. But this year, it became about the national championship, oddly enough, pretty early in the game, even if that was still a long shot. And so it does feel like, you know, they fell a little bit short. Yep.
No, I totally agree. It's funny slash weird to me because I'm just not programmed to think that way because I'm not a Badgers fan, and obviously a lot of people are. But I've heard that argument a lot, that this is a missed opportunity, because if they beat Penn State, I think they are in the playoff.
I did not think that going in, and afterward, I really think they would have been.
Yeah, and so, you know, based on Penn State being 5, Wisconsin had that non-conference win that would have put them up above and beyond. So I think they would have got in over Washington. So I think there are a lot of what ifs, you know, and you can go back to overtime against Ohio State, and the what ifs there, and Michigan. I mean, they just didn't play up to their potential. I think they could have beaten Michigan. But I'm just like, I'm not programmed that way to think, oh, they could have done it. Even though, again, I just recited those facts. It's kind of like last year. And, you know, all I have to compare it to is Iowa, where Iowa went undefeated last year through the regular season. And then the Big Ten championship game. So, like, everybody remembers the Rose Bowl and them getting their butts kicked by Stanford, right? Everybody remembers that distinctly. And then because of that, people remember that they also lost to Michigan State. And some people kind of said they were exposed as being frauds or whatever. They lost that game, like, in the final, I think it was 43 seconds. And they stopped the running back, LJ Scott. They stopped him on the one, and he just pushed forward and pushed through it. So I say that in that I get that so close thing, because to me, Iowa was so close to winning that game and being Big Ten champs and probably making the playoff. But to everybody else, it's like, no, you weren't. You guys weren't the better team that day. Michigan State beat you, and then look what happened. Stanford blew you out. So again, I say that because I think it relates to the Badgers in that, yes, if you want to look at it that way, this team was so close to being in the playoff and so close to being that national champion contender. But then again, if you take a step back, you say, well, no, you lost the games to teams that were better than you. You know, so there's a couple different ways to look at it, but obviously it's a good season. It's a really good season with a lot of good players and a lot of fun moments. You know, the overtime win over Nebraska, getting a win in Iowa City is tough, and then making it to Indy once again. I mean, that's for 4 times in 6 years, only Alabama has won their division that many times. In that same amount of stretch. So Wisconsin is certainly up there, and they're poised to be back in Indianapolis a couple years too. You know, they're going to have a pretty good team for the next few years.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about the Bucks and the Packers at a later moment, because we've become more of the Badgers focus. There is, of course, the Badger basketball team is now pretty much in full swing. They got a couple good wins this week. I don't think we'll get to spend time with any of those teams on this podcast, but my last thought on the football team is they probably would have gotten beaten by Alabama. They probably would have been exposed, if not by Penn State, there by what Alabama brings to the table. But it sure would have been nice to have seen them get that swing as Alabama, obviously the gold standard in the college game. The gold standard in the high school game, if we bring it back to the state of Wisconsin,
nice,
is the Kimberly Papermakers. Yeah, I'm not a fan of my segue there. I feel like that was way too wordy. I'm gonna give myself a D+ on that segue.
No,
JP.
No, not at all. They are the gold standard. They're not from our area, so excuse everybody listening to this in the Milwaukee area who thinks, what do we care about Kimberly? But what they've done is, it's really impressive, and I know that they've broken the hearts of some Arrowhead fans and some Franklin fans and some Marquette fans, and to be fair, they've broken the hearts of 56 straight teams, so you're not alone. But Steve Jones has been head coach, I believe, since 2011, and that's when I met him, and he's just always been a good guy to talk to and kind of gets his role and the team's role and the media's role in covering high school football. And so we've always gotten along, and it kind of made sense to have him on the podcast for a while until – one day he mentioned that he wanted to be a guest on the podcast, and we said,
crazy.
What? So,
yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so let's get to that, and we can chat about it afterwards. But this is my conversation with head coach Steve Jones. All right, here we are with the 2016 WFCA Green Bay Packers Coach of the Year. You finally made it on the podcast, didn't you?
It took a lot of work and some begging, but I finally made it, yes.
Well, thanks for taking time. I appreciate it. Known you a couple years, so we have a small history, but let's start with that. The Coach of the Year honor, you won it last year, too. Is that a big deal for you?
I think it's a great representation of our whole program. Sure. I view it as a staff award, you know, and I think any head coach is going to tell you that you don't do it alone. And we are blessed with an unbelievable coaching staff that takes a lot of weight off my shoulders in a lot of different ways. So it's exciting. I think it shows that the coaches around the state have respect for your program and how you do things, and what coach wouldn't want that.
Okay, so to catch anybody up who doesn't know, which probably is no one, you guys have won at Kimberly. I don't even know if I mentioned that, but you guys have won four straight state titles, the four undefeated 14-0 seasons, so that equates to a 56-game winning streak. So a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the state titles themselves, because nobody's won four straight. I think it's Stratford won six in a row from 03 to 08, and those were all in the lower divisions. Those were, I want to say, like D6, and yours are, I think you have three now in Division I, one in Division II. So I guess even just the state title itself, how do you even describe what winning a state title is like, let alone four of them, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard to even wrap your brain around being in the program, because the four years have really flown by, and I told our kids and our parents at the banquet that we're probably not going to really recognize what has happened probably for another 10 or 15 years. When we look back at it, because when you're in it, you're just always on to the next thing. But it's unbelievable for our community and for our players, obviously, and our coaching staff, and it takes a lot of people to do it, and to do it, you know, the way that we've done it, like you said, at the upper levels and oftentimes convincing fashion, and other times where we've had to come from behind in close games. So our kids have won in a lot of different ways. And, you never think that ever going to happen, because winning one game is tough. You know, winning a game is tough.
Yeah.
Winning, you know, going 14-0 in a season is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And then to be able to do that 4 years in a row and have our kids embrace that target on their back year in and year out, I just can't give them enough credit.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you mentioned just winning one game is tough, and that's such a cliche, but it's totally true. Like, there are a lot of good coaches with really good game plans and, like, really good players even, but they don't win on any given night, and not just against you. You know, so it's a cliche, but that's actually pretty true. It is tough to win, isn't it?
You know, if you look at college football just this year, you know, Division I, there are two undefeated teams. You got Alabama and you got Western Michigan. Everybody else has a loss. You know, and if you look at year in, year out, and, you know, it is tough. And, you know, our kids are always getting the opponent's best shots. And, you know, oftentimes we're seeing plays that we've never seen before, and sometimes entirely different defenses and offenses that we haven't seen before. And, again, a credit to our staff and to our kids and being able to adjust and embrace kind of that challenge week in and week out.
So let's talk about this streak then, because you have won a lot. And, like, to me, it doesn't seem terribly weird that you guys have gone undefeated, just because, obviously, because it's a good program with good kids and good coaches. But then when I realize, or when I look up, or when I know that it's the longest in the nation, that nobody else currently has won that much, and it's not the all-time record. I think that's something like in the 130s or 150s or something out in California. But, but to say that you have the longest winning streak in the nation, that's where it gets crazy to me. Is that crazy to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And to do it at a public school.
Yeah,
I think
true.
That's the other thing that kind of gets mixed in it a little bit, is a lot of the other teams that are up there, like, you know, you take Bishop Gorman out in Nevada. I mean, you got Snoop Dogg's kid going there. You know, you got all these high profile, you know, athletes that bring their kids to this school. And we're, you know, a public school located just outside of Appleton. And as much as people want to say, you know, we don't recruit, we have very few open enrolled kids. And if they are open enrolled, you know, I can count two kids who have open enrolled and have been new to our school, entering their you know, freshman year, and joined our football program. So, you know, these kids play together growing up, and that's, again, credit to our, you know, youth program and everything else. And we don't have these influx of athletes that come in at a public school. And, it's pretty cool, and it's pretty cool on how our kids have done it.
So then how is this happening? How are you doing it? How have you built something that nobody has built in Wisconsin before?
Again, cliche, but it starts with great people. And if you don't have great people, it doesn't happen. So you got to have great football players. We have great football players. We have talented kids. There's no doubt about it. And so we're blessed with that. We have great coaches, as I spoke about before. And I think we have a great culture because of it. And if that would be another thing, you know, I think two pillars in our culture is our weight room. I think we have the best strength and conditioning coach in the state, and if not the nation, and that's not an exaggeration. And Dean Matchy, he's really, really good.
Okay.
And he's got some good people around him. And then, so I think our strength and conditioning is a pillar, and I think our leadership and mental training is another big pillar in our culture. And, you know, I think being able to sustain a winning program, you need an unbelievable culture filled with great people.
So could you do this somewhere else? You know, like you're not from Kimberly, you're from Stevens Point. I'm sure that you love it there, but, you know, could this happen if it was you and maybe if you had the right circumstances? Could it happen somewhere else, or is this like a Kimberly thing that has created this perfect storm?
That is a great question, JP. And I don't know the answer to that. I think, again, with the right people, but I don't know. Again, I think it's a little bit of, you know, we're fortunate with kind of the perfect storm of great people all working under our program, from our youth coaches to our assistant coaches to our parents, and then having great players. And, yeah, I'm sure you could, you know. Okay. I don't think there's a magic pill or there's a magic bullet that we have at Kimberly. I really think our kids and our coaches work extremely hard. There isn't one thing I don't think that we do that's abnormal. I think everybody now has a lot of, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of programs have leadership councils.
Sure.
A lot of, obviously everybody's lifting weights, everybody's doing, you know, speed training. You know, but I think a lot of times it's not the recipe, it's the cook. And we have great cooks in different areas of our program that, that are doing an unbelievable job with our kids.
Okay, I like the cook metaphor. Have you ever thought about what motivates you? I imagine the kids are motivated by a state title and by, you know, even stats. I'm sure you've taught them never to admit it, but, you know, that's kind of what drives them. But what about what motivates you?
You know, a driving force in our program is love. And I think there's programs that, you know, have a fear base, that kids, if they don't do certain things, they're scared that, you know, they're going to have to do up-downs or gassers, or they're going to get screamed at or whatever. And I'm not saying that we don't do up-downs and we don't get on our kids hard, but our program is really built on love. One of our core values is family. I'm sure that you've seen it, but it's an acronym, Forget About Me, I Love You. And we talk a lot about love, and I believe our kids truly care about each other. And, again, I think that's kind of that small-town feel we still have at Kimberly. I know we're a Division I school, but again, these kids grow up playing with each other, and they truly care about each other. We have seniors, you know, that will serve on our scout team, which I think is a little rare. You know, just because they know that that's their role, and they know that it's going to make our team better, you know. And those kids really truly care, and I think our coaches care, and then obviously I do. I tell our kids all the time that I love them, and I love our coaches and our program. And I really think, you know, we have a true family based program based on love, and there's a lot of people that throw that word around, family.
Sure.
You know, college programs, high school programs, but I think our kids live it.
Okay. I have one more about you, and then we can talk about the players, so I'm sure that's a little more comfortable for you. But now that you've done so well, I'm sure you probably get this more than I even realize, but do you want to move on to either a different high school or college? I mean, a lot of people would assume that, you know, for instance, I don't want to make this about me, but I get asked a lot about what my next job is or where I want to go. I'm like, well, I'm pretty happy. Like, I'm from here. I'm working what I want to do. And I ask you that because a lot of people kind of think that next step is to go to college or something like that. But then again, we don't see that a lot of high school head coaches leaving to go to college. I was talking with JR about this. I kind of wonder why we don't see that more.
Yeah, you know, I think the college thing, there's obviously a big process involved, and usually, you know, it's about, you know, getting your foot in and grinding through the GA status and working your way up there. And I think you're seeing a little bit more and more throughout, you know, there's some college coaches that started off as high school coaches, so you see it a little bit. But to go back to your original question, you know, I feel the same way probably you do. I'm happy with where I'm at. Again, we have a supportive administration. We have a supportive community. There's a lot of positive things going on in our school district. We're building an indoor facility. So there's a lot of excitement, and each year there's a different challenge. You know, we're going to have to replace 8 starters on offense and 8 starters on defense, and nobody's going to feel sorry for Kimberly one bit. So, you know, there's different challenges week in, week out. You know, obviously if it's the right fit, I'm always going to listen and entertain the idea. You know, it's like, who wouldn't want to go work for Paul Chryst at Wisconsin? But, sure. You know, is that really in the cards? Probably not. So, sure. Okay. You know, I'm pretty darn happy with where I'm at. I'm fortunate to work for great people and work with great people.
Good. I feel the same way. All right, so moving on to your players. This was a question I thought of this morning. You ready for this? Do you get All-State players? Do you get All-State talent, or do you take players and turn them into through you and your coaching staff, or do you turn kids into All-State players? Because you've had a ton, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a little bit of both. You know, you got to be blessed with a foundation athletically. You know what I mean? You got to have some size. yeah. You see that? You know, you see that when college recruiters come in. You know, they're looking at kids' height and how big their head is.
Yeah,
how big
frames.
Their hands are. Yeah. You know. Yeah, their frame, how big their feet are, how big are their parents. You know, so genetically you got to have the right makeup. But I also think that our coaching staff does a great job of maximizing big talent. You know, I think as coaches, it's your job to make a good player great, a great player excellent, an excellent player elite. You know, but you can't necessarily always make a good player elite. You can't jump a bunch of stages because, you know, you're gifted with what you're gifted with.
Sure.
So I think our strength and conditioning coach, Dean Matchett, does an unbelievable job. I really do.
Okay.
Of building athletes and maximizing kids' potential.
Okay. So I'm a dumb media guy, so I go to the quarterback first. So your quarterback, Danny Vandenboom, going to Wisconsin, which is awesome. But like, again, Jay and I were talking about this. We don't see high school quarterbacks from Wisconsin. Like Joel Stavi is the most rare occurrence that we've ever seen. We just don't see Wisconsin quarterbacks go to the next level and succeed, even though, you know, somebody like Sean McGuire came to mind of the Franklin quarterback from a few years ago. Max Alba was their quarterback this year, who's really good too. But we were talking about, like, is there a glass ceiling for Wisconsin quarterbacks? And Danny was tremendous. But first of all, is he playing quarterback at Wisconsin? Do they know that yet?
Yes, he is. Yep.
Okay.
So when they met last year, he's going to have a 4.5-year scholarship is the plan.
Okay.
So he's going to redshirt his first semester and then earn that scholarship after that.
Sure. So have you ever noticed that that's weird about Wisconsin, that we have all these prolific quarterbacks, and then just, I don't know, they just don't have the numbers. It doesn't seem to translate to college. Have you noticed that, or are we wrong, or what?
Yeah, I see what you're seeing. You know, and just being through this recruiting process, I think one thing I've learned is that recruiting quarterbacks is a whole separate deal.
Yeah.
Way different than recruiting offensive and defensive linemen or linebackers, because every school is going to take just one per class, and sometimes none per class. You hardly ever see a school taking two or more.
Yeah.
You may see that at the offensive line. So, you know, as a state full of really good, talented quarterbacks, if you just look at, you know, the University of Wisconsin, they're probably looking for one quarterback nationwide. So it's a tough position to earn a scholarship in. It's a tough position to go on and compete in, because there's so few opportunities. I think Danny's got an unbelievable opportunity and a chance to really be successful at Madison, because
cool.
I think his best football's in front of him. He still doesn't have any facial hair. His dad is a big dude that played at Wisconsin and
yeah.
went on and played safety for the Buffalo Bills for a couple of years. He's still got some growth in him, and
sure.
he's a three-sport athlete, so he's never been able to live in the weight room for 3 months in the winter and put on weight, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
He's got a great opportunity in front of him, and he's the type of kid, I think, that's going to work hard and take advantage of it. But I definitely see what you guys are seeing. The one thing I think I've learned is just recruiting quarterbacks, that's a totally different
sure.
deal.
And then succeeding, yeah, it's really tough. Again, just like winning games, like it'd be great if everybody could succeed, but turns out it's
yep.
really tough. Moving to running back, this is another question we had, because we were watching the Division II game, and I don't know how much you watched that, but Sam Santiago-Lloyd from Brookfield East, an unbelievable high school player, unbelievable, but without a scholarship offer. And clearly he's a little undersized, he's a little bigger than most running backs, but that made us think about Blair Mulholland from last year, who is a little undersized. He's definitely not as big as Sam was, but we were thinking about kind of like projects that we thought anybody who would take Blair into their program would get a heck of a kid and a heck of a worker and a good player. And then we kind of thought the same thing about this kid from Brookfield East, of how do you not want that kid in your program? Do you see, I don't know if you watched him at all, do you see any comparisons there?
I know that kid's a beast.
Yeah.
You know, he plays, man. We got to see bits and pieces of it. We were kind of underneath the stadium waiting
yeah.
for our game, and
for sure.
to watch some of it. Like I said, so much of Division One and scholarship recruiting right now is based on measurables. And, you know, unfortunately for Blair, he's, as you said, undersized. And, you know, I'm sure the same thing for the Brookfield East kid is, you know, he walks into a room and they're looking for a guy that's, you know, 6'1", you know, 6'2", or whatever it might be. And you know, you kind of see that, and you see it. You know, obviously you do a great job at, you know, doing reporting for big-time football. Those are freak human beings.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what they're looking for is freak human beings that are you know, enormous in size. And it's an arms race a little bit as far as looking for those big human beings and that can play running back at, you know, and be big and still have, as you said, room for growth earlier and through a frame to still put on weight. And they're thinking that, you know, their best football is still in front of them. And I think the same thing with that Blair. Blair still had his best football in front of him. We'll see, you know, South Dakota State, pretty good football program right now, too. So he's, you know, I think he's going to do a great job there.
Switching gears a bit, and this is purely my selfish, curious nature. Do you coach your players on media at all? You know, I'm down here in Milwaukee, but obviously I swing up there a little bit and talk to all your guys. But also the media up there, it does embrace high school sports a little bit more than down here. Like I know, you know, during the playoffs, I'm sure you had requests not once a day, but, you know, quite a bit. And so you do, as the program that you are, you have to talk to the media a lot, and you trust your players being in front of a video camera for 5 minutes when you're not with them. Do you train them at all? How do you deal with that?
You know, we do talk about, you know, what you put out there represents our brand. So some things to say, some things not to say. And then, you know, you hope that your kids listen, you know, and you hope that the message that you convey or that the assistant coaches convey is what is resonating with our kids and then that they are going to believe in and repeat, you know. And, you know, we meet every Sunday night and we, you know, we talk about leadership and mindset and, you know, what is next week's going to be in front of us. And I think what's kind of cool is, and then you watch your kid in the week and they're getting interviewed and a lot of the same stuff that you're saying and your team meetings week in and week out are what they're saying. And that hopefully that means that they're believing in what you're talking about.
Yeah. A little relief of, oh, okay, it is soaking in. They actually are getting it.
Nice. It is.
Oh, for sure. And then, so obviously with the streak and with the program that you've built, you know, they've had to talk a lot about it, and especially the streak. Like, or I guess the championships too, at what point does that become just purely a burden? I know that you've said many times, and I definitely agree with you, that the pressure is a privilege. Again, I 100% agree with that. But also, kind of like when your goal is a championship, and then again, maybe it's not your goal. Your goal is probably just to improve and get better. But, you know, when it's state championship or bust, that's hard to deal with, isn't it, for the kids?
You know, it is. And I try to learn and grow and change my best as a coach. And one thing that I did this year that I probably wouldn't have done 2 or 3 years ago, starting off the year, is, you know, we talked about it.
Sure.
You know, I think 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, I would have tried to hide it from our kids. Let's just not talk about it. Let's just, you know, and how unfair because of social media and getting interviewed and all those things. And kids constantly been bombarded by, you know, people in our community that want to talk about it. And then you don't give them the tools to how to deal with it, you know, that was really would have been unfair. So we talked about it and we tried to embrace the target on our back and really try to, you know, give our kids tools to deal with it. We talked a lot about the difference between pressure and stress. And pressure comes from the outside and it's not controllable.
Sure.
And it's a good thing, as you talked about. Stress, having too much stress is not a good thing. And if you don't give your kids tools on how to deal with the pressure, it turns into stress and it wears them down. So, yeah, you know, it is a little wearing, and it was a little wearing on our coaches, I think, until that A-West game, and we kind of got it done, and then we were able to kind of move on to the next thing. And to say it wasn't wearing, you know, it was. It was wearing, and I'm just really happy, again, with how our kids continue to perform, even though that was kind of hovering above their heads.
And I kind of feel like the pressure is off. You talked about that Appleton-West game, which was the game that gave you the streak, and that was kind of over, and the 4 straight. I just feel like once you win 4 straight titles, it's an entire senior class, you know, like, I don't know. Am I right in thinking that there's a lot less pressure or maybe a lot less stress, as you would say, from the inside?
Yeah, you know, Saturday morning after state, I'm sitting there tossing and turning, trying to figure out what we're going to do next year because we're losing 8 starters on offense and 8 starters on defense. You know, and it's like, gosh, do I have an issue? but I think it's probably natural as a coach is you're always thinking on the next thing.
Sure.
And I just hope that our players are embracing it, and hopefully, you know, majority of our coaches are embracing what happened. And I don't know if the pressure is going to be off. I just think when you have high expectations, that's just what you're going to deal with. And you know, nobody's going to care that we have to replace starters. Nobody's going to care if you deal with injuries. People just want to, you know, expect you to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just what you have when you are successful.
Okay. So what's the next thing right now? Like, is this downtime for you? Do you get a life outside of football, family life? I mean, I think you have a little guy, right? A little, what, little toddler?
Yep. Yeah. We got a 2-year-old Cooper. So, yeah, trying to take some weight off my wife's chest a little bit, or her shoulders, I should say, and try to help out a little bit more around the house. But, you know, we had a lot of our kids were right back in the weight room on Monday after state championship game lifting, and that means that we need to be in there too. So a lot of our coaching staff has been in there since the Monday after, and then the recruiting circus comes to town. So any high school coaches that are out there listening, they know what I'm talking about. Is, you know, that's another job in itself, is trying to give these kids as many opportunities to reach their goals as possible and meet with recruiters and you know, sell your brand a little bit and your culture. So there isn't really an off season. It's just different, you know. It's not, you know, you're not gone Saturday morning. You're not gone all day Sunday. You're not, you know. So you have your weekends, but you definitely have stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, I have a 2-year-old as well, and I know that when it changed, you know, all of a sudden I couldn't just stay at work for hours on end without consequence. It was, you know, I could stay. But then I kind of always wanted to get home. You just kind of, you know, like you said, you want to relieve them and give them a little time off too. So I get it, man.
Yeah, and it's such a short period of time too that you have at this age. And, you know, and I feel like, you miss a lot. I'm sure you do on the road, and, you know, you miss the, you know, first time they crawl, or you miss, you know, you want to be around.
True story. I missed his first step. It was the day after Christmas, and I don't care. I mean, that's such a minor thing, but it was the day after Christmas, December 26th, and I went on the road to, Arizona. It was the Packers regular season game against the Cardinals. I was there for Christmas. I left the day after Christmas, and I get a phone call saying that he took his first step on his own.
So
I'm fine with it. I've come to grips with it. But the only other thing I had, I've just kind of always been curious. I wanted to kind of cover it. I don't know if it's something you even want covered, but I know, like, it's every May or every spring. You guys have had a camp for other kids that autism and special needs, and I just thought how – I don't know. I don't hear about that a lot. Where did that idea come from, and what's it about?
Yeah, we stole it. Just like, you know, a lot of times in coaching and leadership and stuff, you steal ideas. So, you know, Xavier, Coach Hankins up by us, did something similar.
Okay.
So we stole that idea, kind of made it our own, and kind of have advanced. Anybody with special needs is invited throughout the entire state. So we have people coming from different areas, and we try to get the word out the best we can. But yeah, like I said, there's a Saturday in May, and we invite kids with special needs to come to Papermaker Stadium, and we put on a free, clinic, and they get a free t-shirt, and they get snacks, and they get all this stuff for free, and our kids get to work with them, and, we match them up, and they have buddies, and we go through stations, and, nice. You know, they get to tackle our football players, and, you know, dive in the pads, and, you know, in the end zone, and do celebrate, you know, touchdown celebrations, and, you know, it's just it's an awesome day, and I believe, and I know for a fact, our kids get way more out of it than the kids that come with special needs. It's a great learning opportunity for our kids. They get an appreciation for the things that they're gifted with, and they really form some really strong relationships within a day, and those kids still oftentimes keep in contact after the camp is over. So it's really just a highlight of the year for us and our football program, and again, I leave just flying high because I'm just so proud of our kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that makes me want to stay and keep doing this. You know, we like camps like that I didn't even know about. And like I said, I don't know if you even broadcast it to the world that you do it, but you do it because it's the right thing to do. Or I was thinking, like, you know, we talked about Danny Vandenboom and Blair Mulholland, like two of the biggest names that you guys have had. But there's so many kids that are just, I'm sure, that are just good kids. You know, they might not be an all-state player, but, you know, maybe they have a 3.9 and they're in the community and doing all that stuff. There's so many stories out there in high school sports that just don't get enough attention, you know, and I think that's one of them, and I'm sure you have a lot of kids that are worthy of that too.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and that's why, you know, I appreciate it, and that's why, you know, I was giving you a hard time about getting on the podcast, but I do appreciate all you guys do, and I always try to, you know, express that gratitude and express, you know, that, you know, we appreciate the coverage, because sure. These kids work extremely hard and they're good kids, and there's so much negative stuff on the news that, being able to spread some positivity, I think, is awesome. So yep. I do appreciate it.
I love it, man. We're in the same boat. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us. Hopefully I didn't disappoint you. After this long.
I appreciate it.
Cool. All right. Well, good luck. I'm sure I'll be seeing you, right in August, asking you for some more cliches about going undefeated and tuning it out and everything like that.
That's right, man. Thanks again. Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Coach.
So there you go. Yeah, something that you will probably echo as well of what we just ended by there of, you know, does high school sports allow us to cover some pretty cool things and some cool stories that, you know, it's not the all-state player, but maybe it's a kid on the bench or a kid who's just kind of an average everyday starter, but has a great story. And just sharing stories like that is kind of, for me, that's what makes this job. You know, it's a big part of why I'm doing all this, is just to find those stories and find ways to tell them to people who otherwise wouldn't hear them.
I know when people talk about how negative the media is, they're talking about the news primarily, but I always bristle at that because the people I work with, myself included, they love to tell stories that are uplifting and positive, stories that people want to cooperate with us on. I mean, obviously that's not the full gig and you've got to be able to be a watchdog as well. But especially sports, we're so lucky in sports that we get to tell primarily positive stories. Seldom are we telling negative stories. I mean, one of my favorite stories I've ever written is about a kid with autism who happened to be a very dedicated runner. Running was sort of the thing he was really passionate, you could say obsessed about, and he became very good, went to state, overcame lymphoma, and was still able to run. I think he finished dead last in his first race back, ended up getting back, became a marathoner, helped his coach overcome alcoholism later in life. I mean, there's so much there, and those are the stories that I remember years later having been able to tell. So obviously that is something that I get fired up about in this field, and I think you can agree. I mean, again, we can be accused of telling just the good parts too. I think that's fair at times, but still that is, I think, one of the reasons we got into this business and what we love to do.
Yeah. If anything, people should be accusing me of being too fluffy and not a real reporter.
You are totally too fluffy. You're a fluffy, fluffy McFlufferson.
I agree. But, yeah, that was cool just to hear, to get a chance to talk to one of the best coaches in the state. I mean, there is not a single coach in the world who wouldn't want to trade for their success. Maybe they won't trade for their players or they still love their kids. But as far as success goes, he is – and they are, sorry, again, correcting to reflect the program as a whole. You know, they are the gold standard right now. Nobody's done what they're doing. And really, why should it stop? You know, I mean, granted, it could all end week one with just a slip up to somebody like an Oshkosh North or whatever. But they're still going to be competitive, at least. We know that.
We still need to do a full-fledged investigation into why Sam Santiago Lloyd is not getting more major college looks.
And, I know. He didn't know.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
I'm going to have to do some investigative legwork on that. But you should know, if you are a fan of high school football, our all-suburban football team is going to be coming out a week from now. And not to spoil anything, but having referenced Sam Santiago Lloyd, you'll find out who our player and coach of the year are at that time. Not to spoil it, but safe to say Brookfield East, which won its first ever state championship in Division II, might have its thumbprints on those plaudits, as well as our all-suburban team at large. Our all-area football team will be coming out at the same time. I know that's 3 weeks after the end of the season. That's a long time, but that's sort of the way our schedule and works.
What did I win? Did I win anything?
You're the fluffy newscaster of the year, JP Kadoran. Time Warner Cable Sports Channel's best. What do you got on your channel?
I will take it. Well, first of all, we had the Whitewater game on last Saturday, and they lost, in the quarterfinals, which means also the Oshkosh Titans moved on. They're in the national semifinals.
Yay!
For the second time in 5 years. We don't have that game on Saturday. We tried to get it. ESPN, that little group, has the rights to it. So they'll be hoarding it on ESPN3. We would have brought it to you front and center, but we don't have that, but what we do have is everything that we normally bring you in terms of the best high school coverage in the state. Plus Marquette just played Green Bay women, last week. I think Green Bay has another game next week. So, you know, just more good stuff, buddy.
Yeah, Wisconsin volleyball's in the Sweet 16. That'll be a storyline to watch. Absolutely could get back to the Final Four, which would be a fun thing going forward. And speaking of high school hoops coverage, you should definitely check out the Roundball rankings, which are back for another year. MyCommunityNow.com/Roundball. You'll get all sorts of information. You'll get our top five boys teams, top five girls teams, player of the week, scoring leaders, both career and regular season, a few other tidbits here and there. It's one of my favorite things to do. It won a major award last year, so I want to keep the momentum rolling. And I believe right now the Arrowhead girls are the number one team on that side of the ball. Not sure that anyone's gonna unseat them. They're in pretty good shape. And then on the boys' side right now it's Whitnall, but I'd look at Whitnall and Cedarburg as 1 and 2 right now. Some top flight juniors. Tyler Harrow at Whitnall is going to Wisconsin. John Diener at Cedarburg is going to DePaul. They're gonna be some great players to watch going forward.
Very nice. And I think I previewed our high school basketball tip-off show enough last week that I won't bore you with any more tips on how to tune into your channel guide and find that show on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel right now. I wouldn't do that. So
I'm glad.
There we go.
All right, JP. Well, thanks again for checking in with me while I'm on my Kentucky voyage. I went through Indianapolis.
Yeah, enjoy the game.
Yeah, I will. I'm looking forward to seeing my team lose by a 10 to 15 point margin and no worse.
Really?
Yeah. What should I
expect? I'm gonna take Kentucky minus the points on that and take your money.
Well, yeah, Kentucky coming off a loss to UCLA, they're playing angry. So by the time people listen to this, the game will be over and they'll know exactly what happened. But hopefully, I won't make any highlights myself rushing the court in joy.
Well, enjoy your trip, and I look forward to hearing about it on our next podcast.
Indeed, we'll talk to you later, JP. Thanks.
All right, see you, buddy.